Welcome back to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. Today we're broadcasting from the state capitol in Pierre. We're in the Speaker's Lounge next to the House Chambers, where just after 1 o'clock, Governor Dennis Dugard kicks off the 2014 legislative session with a State of the State address. But right now I'm joined by South Dakota Agriculture Secretary Lucas Lynch. And Secretary Lynch, welcome back to Dakota Midday.
Carl, thank you for the invitation. Appreciate it.
Well, I'd like to start out with the farm bill currently being worked out in Congress. Lawmakers responsible for crafting the bill hope to have it ready for floor debate by the middle of this month. But there's reports of growing uncertainty about whether that's going to happen. The farm bill legislation has been delayed for about 2 years now, and I'm wondering from what you're hearing from livestock, ag, farm producers here in the state, what sort of impact that has been having on the state, not having a new farm bill in the current situation where we don't know exactly what's going to happen.
Sure. Well, what we're talking about is stability in the marketplace, and we're talking about we're at the point of the year where a number of our producers, if you're in agriculture, you're making investment decisions for the new year, your crop inputs, what crops you're planting, and you're looking at your risk equation, so to speak, on what you are going to do to mitigate your risk. Part of the farm bill is very much some of our risk mitigation tools, and so it's really important if you're looking at it from a crop producer standpoint, planting row crops, or if you're someone who unfortunately was impacted by the drought or the Atlas blizzard that recently happened. Part of the Farm Bill also includes a disaster provision, and that livestock indemnity program is a very big deal for South Dakota, because when you start looking at the number of producers in western part of our state that were impacted by those devastating livestock losses, you start looking at getting real money back into our rural community. And the economies of South Dakota are very well connected, from our western ranchers' economy to that of our eastern farmers' economy. And so when the calves leave the western part of the state, they hit the feedlots of the eastern part of the state. And so stability in the marketplace is very much a part of the farm bill. And it's long overdue. I mean, frankly, we understand that there's chores that our ag producers do each and every day, and Congress has their chores to do, and the farm bill absolutely needs to be one of those to get done.
What happens if, for example, there's not a new farm bill, that things don't work out the way, you know, it seems before Christmas there was optimism that this would get done, and now,
sure.
You know, the U.S. Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack yesterday was a little bit more pessimistic.
Sure. Well, you know, whether you're talking about an extension or operating in a vacuum without a farm bill passed, that's part of that uncertainty. And one of the best things that we can do for national security in our country is have food security. And so that's part of that incentive on behalf of our Congress and on behalf of the ag producers across our country that are in the food production industry. It's important to get this farm bill passed. And so, you know, a lot of unintended consequences of not having a farm bill could very well unfold. But, you know, I still think at the end of the day, when we have our conference committee coming together, the anticipation, yet again, on the front side of another planting season here in the United States, that farm bill is going to eventually hopefully get to a point where it is passed and we do have stability in the marketplace. You know, my counterparts and I will be gathering here shortly in Virginia with the National Association of State Departments of Agriculture, and we come together and we talk about the what if or worst case scenarios around not having a farm bill. But ultimately it's about, let's get it passed, let's find out that common ground on our nutrition title so that we can start doing the work of agriculture, because in our country, Carl, we enjoy the lowest cost of food per our income, and that's because of our food policy in our country. And when you look at our stability internationally, it's because of our food. And, you know, I've often reminded folks, everybody has a vested interest in agriculture. A farm bill is not just about farm and ag practices. Over 80% of that essentially is that of a nutrition program. And so you have a food bill that's embedded and as part as of the farm bill. And so it is good for us to continue to move forward. Those livestock disaster programs, that's real money that could be in western South Dakota, and I think it's important to also just hit pause and say, this is a part of our state that never really looks for any government intervention. And so for one of the first times in a long, long time, you have our Western livestock producers that are in a position, if they qualify, to get some disaster dollars back to shore up their losses.
What is the current situation with those livestock producers that were hurt so dramatically this past fall?
Yeah.
Early fall.
It's hard to believe. I mean, it feels like almost a lifetime ago, but it was only 3 short months ago. The current situation, and I guess I would just reference the fact that we've been talking with the Ranchers Relief Fund folks. You know, they've raised over $5 million in that program, and they've had a number of applicants, somewhere north of 600 when you think of applicants or nominations that come in. And then when you think about the totality of livestock loss, $5 million is barely a drop in the bucket. But we're so thankful that we have kind of a short-term on the and generosity of South Dakotans as well as Americans, and frankly people from all over the globe have given to that, but that's a way to get some short-term needs fulfilled. You know, part of that challenge right now is back to your farm bill question, is we got to know what's on the balance sheet. And if my family operation, or if I'm a producer in Western South Dakota and I know that we qualify for $100,000 maximum a livestock indemnity, I want to be able to plug that number into my balance sheet for my lender as well as for myself, so that we know what ground we have to stand on. That being said, one of the things I think is just an incredible success story of South Dakota is truly the untold stories of generosity across our state. Neighbor helping neighbor, one gentleman pulling in a trailer load of cattle and dropping them off at a next generation producer to help shore up his loss. When you look at that, and I've said it to a number of the folks that we visited with in Western South Dakota, you can put a value on feed, you can put a value on livestock, you can put a value on a piece of equipment or a truck, but what you can't put a value on in South Dakota is community. And we've been richly blessed across our state from one side to the other in the sense of community that we enjoy here.
In the Farm Bill, one of the conferees hammering out the Farm Bill, working on that, is Representative Kristi Noem. I'm wondering if the State Ag Department has had any, you know, do you talk with her?
Sure.
This process is ongoing, or maybe before the process?
Yeah, you bet. Well, the Congresswoman has been very good about reaching out to our Ag Department, also interfacing with us when we're at the same meetings. We might have one of our representatives or one of her staff there as well. In fact, we're looking forward to trying to connect with her personally in the coming weeks, if it works into her calendar, when we're in D.C. for our NASDA meetings.
Now, that's work going on in Washington here in Pierre. We're kicking off the legislative session. The governor gives his State of the State address in about a half hour or so. Do you expect any important ag legislation during this session?
Yeah, you know, one of the great things about South Dakota is our number one industry is that of agriculture. And for an agency like ours that really only has 0.4% of the general budget in terms of the amount of taxpayer dollars that drive our Department of Agriculture, your Department of Agriculture, it's a very, very small number. But ultimately, because it is the state's largest industry, there's a lot of interest. And when you go through redistricting of our legislative districts, you know, and as the population centers seem to continue to evolve to, whether it be a Sioux Falls or a Rapid City or an Aberdeen or a Watertown, as those areas grow, there tends to be less and less voices from agriculture from our elected legislative districts. And so the work of the people around agriculture gets to be that much more front and center because we have fewer voices representing it. And when we look at that as a State Department of Ag, we're here to answer questions on behalf of our legislators. There might be bills that come up that we may not know about right now, but we'll be happy to come in and testify either as a proponent or a neutral position or potentially even as an opponent, depending on what the bill is. But that's one of the great things about our state. 105 legislators come here. They do the people's work. They give us the enabling legislation and the appropriations. Then the agencies go out and do that work on behalf of the legislative body and the people of South Dakota. So one of the bills coming up would be that of animal cruelty. That's probably one that you've talked about or have heard on. That's really a result of all of the ag industry coming together this last year with Dr. Dustin Odukoven, our state veterinarian, really helping spearhead the effort at the request of the Senate Ag Chair last year, Senator Chantel Krebs, to on that of animal cruelty. In the state of South Dakota, we do not have a felony penalty for animal cruelty, and we are the last state to address such an issue. And we feel that it's best on behalf of agriculture to make sure that if we're going to go down this road and propose legislation, that agriculture is at the table and that we're looking at all of the diverse interests of South Dakota. And we've incorporated that, and now it's going to have its hearing and make its way into the political debate.
Now, that seems like that's one of those tough issues to balance, where you have the welfare of the animals, but yet at the same time, the interest of the ag producers.
Yeah, you know, and starting from a presumption, our agriculturalists, our farmers and ranchers, by far and away always do what's best for our livestock. Yeah, you know, and sometimes natural disasters like the blizzard happen, and that was beyond the scope of individuals' control. That was Mother Nature. That was, as they say, an act of God. You know, it happened in our state, and it happened with such fierceness. You know, we lost buffalo, antelope, deer, cattle, sheep, horses. It was a devastating blizzard, and it was just the intensity of the rain, the wind, the temperatures, and the snow. Cattle can handle a lot of things, but when they don't have the coat, or even the livestock or the wildlife don't have the winter coats yet built up, that's really what hit them in that case. But when you look at animal cruelty, or our producers in our state, they do the right thing. And, you know, in case in point, if you're ever out there working on a ranch or beside someone who tends to animals, if they see you misbehaving, I've seen it a number of times where a father talking to a son or a grandpa talking to a grandson about, hey, take care of that animal. Don't treat it like that. And so we police ourselves, and this is an act of us policing ourselves on behalf of agriculture, because we're going to do the right thing. And a Class 6 felony is, you know, maximum penalties up to 2 years imprisonment or a $4,000 fine. And so those are big sentences. That's how serious we take it as ag industry groups. And a lot of this conversation has been finding the common ground throughout all of those that have a vested interest in wildlife and livestock in the state of South Dakota.
You're listening to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. We're broadcasting from the state capitol here in Pierre. We're in the Speaker's Lounge next to the House Chambers, where in less than a half hour, Governor Dennis Dugard delivers his State of the State address. My guest right now is South Dakota Ag Secretary Lucas Lench. And speaking of the governor, coming up in May, the third trade mission to China. You've been Ag Secretary for, what, since last spring? Have you been on the...
Yeah, just 8 months, stepping in on behalf of following Secretary Walt Bones. I did serve under Walt Bones previously as the Director of Ag Development. I had left state government and started to pursue my business interests, and a conversation and interview later, I found myself visiting with the governor about the future of agriculture in our state. So a real honor to come back and join him. This will be my third trip to China. One was with South Dakota Ag and Rural Leadership, which was an educational program. I was on the first trade mission with the administration, as well as a USDA delegation that was over there at that time as well. This time, it's about relationships. And when you think about our global economy, and you look at South Dakota, and it's interesting just to kind of ballpark a few nuggets of information for our listeners out there, Carl. If you take all the soybeans in South Dakota and you were to export them to China, it would supply China for 1 month, every soybean in our state. China's interested in what we do, because when they import our soybeans, or if we've added value to our feed by feeding livestock, pork or poultry, or looking at our beef industry or dairy, when we add value to it and they import anything, whether it be a commodity itself as corn or soybeans or wheat, or something that we've added value as in livestock production, they're importing our natural resources to help feed, you know, 1.6 billion people. Because when you look at that, we have access to our ground, our rain, our sunshine, our natural resources, the things that we do really well with only 300 million people in our country. And a state like South Dakota with 800, you know, 15,000 or so residents, And 15% of that population is in food production. When we go to China, there's very much an economic development part of our visit, where maybe in the past it's been sitting down with the leadership of Daktronics and with the governor in the country. It helps forge relationships, because that's what it's about. People do business with people. And whether you're a governor of South Dakota or in leadership in China or in a business setting, you know, in our state, we like business, or we like government out of our lives. But when you go to a foreign government, many times they trust that. And so they welcome a government visit as well as intervention of relationship building. And when you have that many people, it takes time. And relationships are about time and consistency. And this governor has said, we're going to be consistent in our relationship building on behalf of what we produce here in South Dakota for agriculture as well as for our economic development manufacturing sectors.
Has that relationship building resulted in anything yet?
It has. You know, there's been great access, market access openings for some of the businesses that have come. You know, I know Commissioner of Economic Development Pat Costello has been tracking a lot of those metrics as well on the ag side. When you represent commodity organizations, if you could imagine, you're just talking about a crop, and that's that's at a national level. We do a lot of that building through our Foreign Ag Service and our agricultural ambassadors on foreign trade. But when you come to a state like South Dakota, what are the things that are specific to our state? And it might be maybe our meat production. It might be our value-added whey proteins that we have in our state that are exported. And sometimes it's just talking about what we do in an extra special way. And when it's in agriculture, it's hard not to talk about, you know, food, feed, fuel, or fiber. Those are pretty much the things that folks are interested in. They also like to import our dried distillers grains that are a byproduct of our ethanol. And so there's so many diverse interests when you look back to a state. Just a quick story for you, mm-hmm. Carl. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're a mother in China and you maybe have one child and potentially up to two, when you look at the food that you buy and you're giving to your child, and if you don't trust your own government's food, where do they look? They look to the United States. And a case in point, there was a vendor that we met with 2 years ago that talked about ultra-high temperature milk. First time they imported was a container load of UHT milk. It's basically shelf-stable, ultra-high pasteurized milk. And that mother in China will go find that U.S. product. Well, he went from having one container load a month to within a year, over 30 container loads every month coming in to supply those mothers in China with a trusted and value-specific ultra-high temperature milk carton. Reason I bring that up is that it talks to the faith that our foreign customers have in our production system here in the United States. We take it for granted because it's a very safe and adequate food supply. But when you're in another country and there's enough things that happen in the food system and you begin not to trust it, that's where it's an opportunity for the United States. And just an example of growth, it's a big subject, so yes. Thank you for letting me talk about it. China, when we were there 2 years ago, met with some of the folks from KFC, Kentucky Fried Chicken. I met with them in 2008, and I asked the question then, you know, in 2008, you were building a new KFC every 24 hours. That didn't seem sustainable. And they said, you're right. It's now one every 18 hours, meaning there's so much demand. When you talk about a middle class of 500 million people and yet still another 500 million coming out of poverty, there's so much demand. As their lifestyle increases, their demand for protein and their demand for diversity of food increases. That's all upside in market potential for our farmers and ranchers in South Dakota and, quite frankly, across America.
Well, Secretary Lynch, we're out of time. I want to thank you so much for stopping by and joining us on Dakota Midday.
My pleasure. Thank you.